Take your seats. I'd like to call to order today's meeting of the Judiciary Policy and Finance Committee today, February 24, 2004. Clerk, would you take the roll, please?
Chairman Smith.
Here.
Representative Eastland.
Here.
Anderson.
Here.
Blaine.
Here.
Ellison. Fuller.
Here.
Hillstrom.
Here.
Hilty.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Lesch.
Here.
Littman.
Here.
Meslow.
Here.
Murphy.
Here.
Tamar. Powell.
Here.
Rhodes.
Here.
Soderstrom.
Here.
Strand.
Here.
Powell.
Here.
Walls.
Here.
The chair notes that we do have the presence of a quorum. Therefore, we will first take up the consideration of the minutes from the February 19, 2004 hearing. Representative Fuller moves the minutes from that date. Any questions? Any discussion? If not, those on the minutes, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. Motion is approved. The minutes of that date are adopted. Committee, we have only one item on the agenda today, and that's House File 97. The companion bill, Senate File 58, has passed the Senate. The House has given it a first reading. It's referred it to this committee. So we'll lay that House bill aside, and we'll be acting on the Senate file. Is there a motion on Representative Strawn, if you take the desk, and then I'll ask you to make a motion, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move that Senate File 58 be recommended to pass and forwarded to the Transportation Finance Committee, I believe.
All right. That motion is before us. The bill is before us. I'm going to ask you to present. I notice on our agenda we have five testifiers. I will see at the end of their testimony if there's anyone in the audience who wishes to be excuse me, heard on this bill. We do have 1 hour and one half, and so I'd like to everyone to bear in mind that we will be going through presentation, we will be going through the testimony, we'll be returned to the table for discussion, and we will vote on it before our regularly scheduled adjournment time this morning. So, Representative Strawn, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Forgive my cold and my croaky voice this morning, but this is the .08 DUI bill, which those of you that have been a while, have been here a while, know that you've considered this before, and many of you have heard a lot about this bill. Representative Stanek was originally the chief author, and now I am, and as you know, the Senate did pass it a few weeks ago. We will be brief. I'm not going to have a long presentation for you this morning, but as you know, alcohol-related crashes are devastating to families. They're devastating to our society. This is a very simple bill. It simply lowers the per se alcohol concentration limit in the state of Minnesota to 0.08 from 0.10. We'll talk in a little bit about the federal relationship between transportation dollars and this particular bill. But probably the most salient comment I've heard about 0.08 is that this is more about message than about practice. We're going to talk about how it's going to apply to government, how it's going to apply to police officers. But at the end of the day, it's really about a message. It's really about what message we're sending to people about what is acceptable when they drink and drive. 0.08 will save lives. It will prevent injuries. And it's about changing perceptions, not to have that fifth or sixth beer or that fifth or sixth drink. The fact is that 0.08 is too drunk to drive. It is intoxicated. Some of you know that I'm a police officer, have been for 17 years. I've arrested hundreds of drunk drivers in my career. Some legislators have gone through a drinking exercise where they get up to a 0.08. I did that in a little different context. When I went through intoxilizer school as a police officer, I learned how to run the instrument that you give to suspected drunk drivers. They have the officers so that they can testify in court, actually drink alcohol and get to certain levels, and we test each other as we go. And during that exercise, I had to have, I think that based on my body weight, I had to have 12 rum and cokes in a period of about an hour and a half. And I remember being tested at a 0.08, and I was more intoxicated than I've ever been in my life before or since. And I went to a state university, so that's a significant statement. Yeah. The fact is, 0.08 is drunk. It's not a couple beers at Chili's. And the fact is, too, that 0.10 has been with us a long time, and we sort of assume that that's the you know, the legal limit that's based in science, and it isn't. It's a round number that somebody came up with a long time ago, at which we said, well, anything beyond 1.0, we're just going to assume that they're drunk. Well, through experience and a lot of background and a lot of years, we've learned now that 0.08 is actually a more accurate number at which to measure true intoxication and impairment. To talk a little bit about some of the science and also the federal relationship between transportation dollars and 0.08, I'd like, Mr. Chair, with your permission, to turn this over to Kathy Swanson, who is the Director of the Office of Traffic Safety.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kathy Swanson. I'm the Director of the Office of Traffic Safety, which is a part of the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. I want to echo what Representative Strand has said about the need for 0.08 and the fact that science has demonstrated that a person at 0.08 is simply too impaired to be driving on the road. A person who is at 0.08 is simply someone that you don't want to meet on a two-lane highway coming towards you. In addition to the lives that could be saved by enacting 0.08, let me talk a little bit, though, about the funds that will be saved by making 0.08 the law in Minnesota. Minnesota is now one of three states in the United States that does not have 0.08. Only Minnesota, Colorado, and Delaware still have 0.10 as their law. Part of that is because the federal government has decided to withhold highway construction funds for states that do not pass 0.08. In federal fiscal 2004, that's the time period that we're in right now, they are withholding about $9.5 million in federal highway construction funds from Minnesota. If we don't have 0.08 effective this year, this federal fiscal year, which ends September 30th, they will withhold funding again next year and the year after and until Minnesota passes 0.08. Those funds are not just used by the Minnesota Department of Transportation. A portion of those funds are passed on to locals and counties for highway construction, road repair, and the like in the counties. The dollar amount currently being withheld from local government is about $2.8 million. So funds are being withheld right now. Funds will continue to be withheld until 0.08 is the law in Minnesota. In the Department of Public Safety, we have talked for many years about the need for 0.08 as something that will save lives. Based on experience in other states, we anticipate that in Minnesota about 14 lives a year could be saved by passing 0.08. That message hasn't carried the day in the past. Perhaps the message about the lost highway funds will carry the day. Thank you very much.
Ms. Swanson, we want to get through all of your presentations. If there is any clarifying question along the way, I guess I will entertain those. That segues into me asking you one. The lost highway funds, unquote, if this bill doesn't pass by 07, those lost funds, but does pass by 07, will we get those funds back?
Mr. Chairman, yes, those funds will be returned to Minnesota without any interest accrued and at whatever reduced buying power they carry with them if costs increase for the highway construction. So, yes, those funds will be returned if Minnesota passes 08 by 2007.
So, Ms. Swanson, then in plain English, we would not have to pass this bill this year or next. We could do it prior to 07 and still receive those funds back. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Very good. Representative Fuller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Swanson, I'm wondering, you just stated that there are now three states that have not passed felony. I thought it was four, so question of which one just complied with what the federal government is trying to impose on us. But then also, we, I believe it was 2 years ago, passed felony DWI, where if you had 4 and 10 years, you know that would be a felony in Minnesota. Are there any other states that have also passed felony level DWI that you're aware of?
Ms. Swanson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the state that just complied is West Virginia. West Virginia's governor just signed their 0.08 bill. In terms of felony, there are other states that have felony, but I'm sorry, I don't have with me a list of them. I could get that and provide for you, though.
That would be fine, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Thank you. Major Aslison, did you want to address the committee?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, good morning. My name is Mike Oslis, and I'm a major with the State Patrol. I've served as a state trooper for 27 years, and during that time have been very involved in both DWI enforcement and, maybe most importantly, DWI enforcement instruction, teaching other troopers and police officers around the state how to enforce this very complex law. As a member of the State Patrol, and personally, I support this bill. One of the reasons I support it is because of its simplicity, and it's critical that we keep the process simple for the officer on the street. All of the other countermeasures involved in a DWI processing are moot unless we have officers who are willing to enforce the law. This body passed a recodification of the DWI law in 2000. That was a gift to law enforcement. It was desperately needed, and we don't want to do anything that would take away from that very important work. The other comment I would make about 0.08 is just based on some personal observations, nothing terribly profound. But in this state, we're doing some good things with DWI enforcement. We're trying to use resources correctly, but we're just not doing a great job. When you consider that we kill 250 people a year, injure over 4,000, there needs to be more work done, and this provides law enforcement with a tool. If and when this bill passes, it's not going to keep people from driving impaired, but it gives law enforcement and the courts an additional tool, and as one of the authors of this bill said, this is about a message. I'll just give you a couple of personal observations about 08 itself. As a DWI instructor and someone who's been part of dosing several legislators in alcohol workshops, it's fascinating to see how impaired people really are at 0.08. I came on this job long enough ago that we kind of considered anything under 1.0 as being maybe a thin arrest. And I didn't change that opinion until we really started looking at how impaired people really were at 08. And you can see why the medical community says that that is a much more true marker of impairment than is 1.0. We certainly see that. We see that all too often in deaths that are just horrifying. It's a terrible, terrible way to die or be injured in a traffic crash. It does tremendous things to the body. There's always the question about what does this do to law enforcement practices, and my very sincere and strong belief is that it will do little to change law enforcement practices. It will merely give an additional tool. I think law enforcement is no different than any occupation. You operate on the basis of triage. You take the worst first. And so when you've got serious problems, the higher offenders, the higher alcohol concentration offenders, those are the ones that you're going to work at first. But you begin the process of going down the line and trying to do the best you can with the time that you have. The other thing that I'll mention is this bill gets discussed just to kind of remind you what I think all citizens tend to know, but sometimes it gets misunderstood, and that is that the requirement to make a stop is that of reasonable suspicion. Sometimes we confuse that with probable cause. The officer has to have reasonable suspicion to make the stop and then probable cause to make the arrest. That standard doesn't change whether we're dealing with an 08 or a 0.10 arrest. You still have to have probable cause to believe that the driver was driving while impaired. So again, I just end where I started. This is good public policy. You would be helping law enforcement's effort to keep our highways and streets as safe as we can make them. Thank you.
Major Oslison, you said there were how many? 250 deaths?
That's an approximation, Mr. Chair. I think that the number last year was 239, but we tend to have around 250 deaths every year, and sadly that just doesn't change very dramatically. It kind of holds there year after year, and then the number of injuries is over 4,000. Of course, some of those life-term injuries, very incapacitating.
Of those 239 or 250 fatalities, how many were the result of an alcohol in someone's blood level at an 08 to an 09 level? Do you know?
Mr. Chair, I don't. That information is available. I don't have it with me. I know that we can get that for you.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Assistant, in all these accidents, events, deaths, and so forth, how many children are affected?
Major
directly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I don't know, except that the percentage tends to be about the same. So I know, for example, that we end up, I just look at generalities. And out of the 550 or so to 600 traffic deaths that we have every year, somewhere around more than 100 under the age of 19 are killed in traffic crashes. And in the teenage group, a high percentage of those are in alcohol-related crashes. But across the board, you have, you know, a mixture of age groups involved in alcohol-related crashes. That's a very vague answer. And again, that information is available through Director Swanson's office, but that's our observation.
Representative Fuller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good to see you, Major. Question on the 250 deaths. I know when I first got into the legislature back after the 98 election, in the records that were being kept and what was actually being counted as an alcohol-related death, wasn't always whether or not the driver was impaired. It was if you had a sober driver that was in an accident with a pedestrian that was intoxicated and ended up being in the middle of the road, that was an alcohol-related death. And I think also if there was somebody impaired in the car, it was considered an alcohol-related death. Have we changed the standards on the way we're calculating over the last few years as we're reporting different? I mean, so is the current 250s, does it still include those incidences where it's not necessarily the driver that was impaired?
Mm-hmm. Major Austin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fuller, I'll give you the answer as I understand it. You're absolutely right that an alcohol-related crash could involve an intoxicated or impaired driver who is not at fault in the crash. That would be classified as an alcohol-related crash. Likewise, if the pedestrian were intoxicated, that may be classified as an alcohol-related crash. The condition of the passenger in a vehicle wouldn't put it in that category. But that said, I think that if you ask any officer who is going to these crashes week after week, night after night, and say, let's talk about the last, pick a number, 25 alcohol-related crashes you've been in, tell me how many of those involved circumstances where the impaired driver was not dramatically at fault. It's going to be an extremely difficult task for the officer to come up with one. And that's been my experience. And I'll just use this as an opportunity to tell you, I was telling our rookie class yesterday, I started this job at the age of 19, pretty influential age, and the first traffic death that I went to was caused by a drunk driver. And I kept track after that, and it took 23 fatals, 23 dead bodies, before I went to one that was not alcohol-related. Now, part of that's because of the time of night that I, you know, part of the day that I worked, but, you know, that I just give you that as kind of that personal background as to why some of us are so passionate about trying to keep those things from happening in the first place.
Just a Representative follow-up, Mr. Chair. As you know, Major, I'm a volunteer fireman or hose jockey, as my, you know, law enforcement counterparts like to harass me about, and we share a lot of your concerns and see many things we'd rather not.
Absolutely right.
Very good. Any further questions? If not, then I'll just go to the next testifier on our list.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Ann Lynn and Finn, League of Minnesota Cities.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Ann Finn, and I represent the League of Minnesota Cities and the 854 cities throughout the state. I'm here today to let you know that the League of Cities supports the reduction in the threshold for drinking and driving. Our members believe that this is an important public safety issue, and we also believe that it's essential to keep federal highway dollars flowing to Minnesota. The fact is that we need the highway dollars now. We are uncertain about the potential fiscal impact on cities, and that was a big part of our discussion when we went and talked about what position to take on this issue. However, we do believe that the reduced threshold is a deterrent to drinking and driving and a good public policy. With that, I'll stand for questions. Thank you.
Any questions of this witness, testifier? I don't see any. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next on our list would be Ken Rockler, Executive Director, Wine, Beer, and Spirits Federation of Minnesota, sir. And also Dan Campbell, Wine, Beer, and Spirits Federation of Minnesota.
Good Chairman Smith, members of the committee, my name is Ken Rockler, Executive Director of the Wine, Beer, and Spirits Federation, and we oppose this bill, and I've opposed this bill for 18 years, I guess, at this point. My colleague, Dan Campbell, is going to pass out some charts to you. Okay. I think it's really important that you always hear opinions, and you hear people quoting opinions on this issue. The data that you're about to see came from an email from Paul Lobo of the National Highway Transportation Safety Agency. We A, have a copy of the email here, or B, I can get any one of you his telephone number or his email address. This is the hard statistics on what has actually happened to the United States, and this is gathered through the Federal Accident Reporting System, or FARS. We adamantly maintain that this does not save lives, and I think the charts will show that. I wouldn't be here if I thought it saved lives. So I think it's really important that you take a look at the chart that he's about to pass out there. I also think it's important to note that the blood alcohol cards that you're going to see right there, I have asked public safety about this in the past. I don't know how to refute the comment when somebody says they've had 20 Manhattans or 15 beers. I can only tell you that I asked public safety point blank, are these charts accurate? And they say yes. So I'm not quite sure how the testing is done where they come up with people can drink that much. I'm sure nobody here would say right now that they think you could have 8 drinks and be safe to drive, yet they're saying it takes that level to get to 0.08. The funding. I'm glad that Ms. Finn from the League of Cities commented that they're nervous about the amount of local costs that are going to be there. In your handout, you'll see that there's a letter from the Metropolitan Inter-County Association and from the Minnesota Department of Corrections. In addition to the local costs that we're talking about, there's probably going to be a lost sales tax in the area of $4 to $5 million per year. I think what's really important is that all of the money that we lose if we pass this bill, none of it ever comes back. Not the expenses that we paid, nor the taxes that we didn't collect. If we pass this bill by September 30th of 2007, which I still find objectionable, but I recognize that fiscal reality might require that at this time, the highway funds are returned 100% to us. Also, there's been some question as to how long it takes to get the funds. We contacted the person again with the National Highway Transportation Safety Agency, and we can apply for the funds immediately, and the funds will come to us in a fairly quick amount of time. They do not take 2-4 years to come after that. Last but not least, this bill is another step down the treacherous slope of federal mandates. Right now, many of you are probably aware of the fact that federal file Senate 1072, they're already starting to use the exact same federal trunk highway funding to mandate unannounced roadblocks. So I hope you'll take a look at what the implication of this is. I hope Minnesota sends a message that we don't want this type of unfunded mandate. At this time, I'll have my colleague Dan Campbell take over.
Chairman Smith, members of the committee. Again, Dan Campbell with Wine, Beer, and Spirits Federation. What I wanted to address was the motor vehicle fatalities in the state of Minnesota, and you should have in front of you a handout, this one, and a couple of things that we're covering here. There are a few different ways to measure blood alcohol level, and I heard one question come up as percentage of blood alcohol level in drivers and percentage of blood alcohol level by highest fatality in crash. To make it simple, since I think that's what we're discussing is drunk driving, is we took it as percentage of blood alcohol level in fatal crashes by driver's blood alcohol level. Now, that could be that a sober driver hits a drunk driver or hits a person who's at a trace amount, but we're just going to group it all in together. What you can see at the top of that chart is the Minnesota 5-year average for motor vehicle fatalities by blood alcohol level. And what we were really looking at was where are the fatalities? And as you can see at the chart, the lowest amount of fatalities is actually at the 0.08, 0.09 combined level here. And in Minnesota, That number, let's see, for 2002 was, let's see, I believe that was 1.3% of all fatalities, and the total average, a five-year average, was 1.5% of all fatalities. Now, if you take a look at that chart, I mean, we do have one section that is no alcohol, and, you know, that could be all of us driving in here today. Those are accidents, or accidents happen. As we take a look and we go from the 01 to 04s, the 05 to 07, you can see that the number actually is fairly great. And then at 08 and 09, the number reduces. It does drop quite a bit. Now, after that, if you can take a look at the 10s to 14s in that Minnesota five-year average, you see a dramatic increase. And then from there, it's the 15 pluses. And that's a real concern. We talk about almost 20% of all Minnesota fatalities are at 15 plus. That's something that is a very real concern to everyone. I guess my question today would be one that you should ask yourselves, which is, how does lowering the blood alcohol limit to 08 keep the serious offenders off the roads? And we've got 20% of the offenders well above at 15 plus. Now, if we take the charts that I have in front of you, for example, you know, I can go down this by body weight and we can each analyze it. If truly somebody's been able to have 12 drinks to get to 08, I can't imagine how many drinks that gets them up to 15. But regardless, I wanted to also, in the scope of things, just because we are dealing with a national issue and there are federal dollars involved, we've got the Illinois averages here, we've got the California averages, and we've got Indiana. The reason that I chose Illinois and California were because Illinois was enacted as an 08 state in 97, California in 1990. And if you take a look at those charts, they mirror Minnesota's chart. Now, I guess what we're getting at is, if 08 and 09 drivers as a combined group represent the least amount of fatalities on the road, by percentages from in Minnesota at 1.5% to California, I think was one of the higher ones at almost 3% of fatalities, there really isn't a direct correlation to me of saving lives. I mean, we have a large amount of no alcohol accidents, we have a large amount of accidents at 15 plus, yet we have this group that's very minimal between there. I guess the data just, and I've been going over it for a long time now, does not support that 08 will specifically save lives. The other thing that I wanted to speak to was as far as cost of a DUI or DWI, and on the back side of this chart, and this is last year's data, says the average cost of a DWI is $19,000. Now, I suppose we can, you know, look at the attorney's fees on there and things like that. Some people may waive those, but I'm also here to speak of people like myself of, you know, modest incomes. It's a very expensive thing, and when we start talking about an impairment issue and a DWI issue, and the fact that a DWI is going to cost almost $20,000. I mean, by last year's, if it was 19, I can't imagine that anybody's auto insurance has really gone down in the last year and with the economy. What we start talking about is impairment laws versus drunk driving laws. And we have a potential here with so little fatalities that I'm having a hard time seeing via the data, statewide data. Somebody can be pulled over, may not be impaired, may pass all of the physical sobriety field tests, and indeed there may be no impairment, yet they may be at a blood alcohol level of 08. I don't know, and I can't speak for individuals' levels of impairment, as well as we could have somebody at 04 who is very impaired, and we should get them off the road, because they're as dangerous to them as anybody else. So that was just what I wanted to cover, and thank you.
Very good. Any questions from the committee? Representative Lippman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Rockley, I just wanted to follow your reasoning on the idea that this is a unfunded federal mandate. I understand from the information we received from Mr. Carter that total agency expenditures will be in the $1.1 million range in as far as state compliance costs. I think one could add another million or so, I understand, from at least from MICA, for perhaps local compliance costs. But the revenues that Mr. Carter suggests are $30 million in additional revenue. Is my arithmetic wanting, and B, if it isn't, how is that an unfunded mandate? I mean, conceivably, we're getting $28 million extra in highway funds for compliance with a policy which we may or may not agree with.
Mr. Rockler.
Chairman Smith, Representative Lippman. Actually, this year we'll be receiving $13.28 million in funds. It would be next year, it'd be $19.92, and the year after that, $26. But those are only good for federal trunk highway. They don't address any of the costs of incarceration, probation, judiciary, or law enforcement. Many of you saw the article in the Star and Tribune here just about 2 months ago. The city of Belgrade didn't even want to prosecute a driver that was at 0.17 because they didn't have enough money to do it. They were convinced to do it by Stearns County, but I would call that an unfunded federal mandate. Who's going to bear those costs at the local level?
Representative Lippman.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Rockler, just so that I understand your testimony, it would be your view that unless the legislature made deductions from the Transportation Department so as to account for other agency costs, it would be an unfunded mandate.
Is that your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions of this witness? Is there anyone in the audience who wants to be heard on this bill, either pro or con, who has not already spoken? Would you raise your hand now, please? Keep them up so I can count. I see only one hand. Ma'am, come forward. We'll give you 5 minutes to offer your comments. One of you gentlemen vacate your seat. And
absolutely. Mr. Chairman, I also heard on the fatalities. I just wanted to say I checked the data. I believe in 2002, the 08-09 fatalities, and we were talking about a number of roughly 230 to 250, the officer didn't have the data available for fatalities at 08-09. I believe that total number was 11 fatalities. For then, so
that would
I can provide
that,
those numbers.
Mr. Campbell, would that be then calculated from your, I believe you said 1.3%?
Yes.
Time of the 239?
Absolutely, sir.
Doesn't quite add up, but at any rate, go ahead. Ma'am?
Chairman Smith, my name is Lynn Gogler, and I am the legislative chair and public policy liaison for Mothers Against Drunk Driving in Minnesota. And I will be very brief because I have testified before this committee, I think, since 1995, and I'm sure you're all aware of the statistics and why MAD believes in 0.08. But something that I wanted, several things I wanted to make clear to you. Since I have testified before this committee, 1,792 people have been dead from an alcohol-related crash. And when we talk about alcohol-related crashes, I guess we can talk about the figures any way we want, but something we forget, a person can be hurt today in an alcohol-related crash and die in May and would not be considered a death in an alcohol-related tragedy. You have to be dead within 30 days of the crash. The other thing we don't talk about is injury. One thing that MAD does that many of you may not be aware of is we have nationwide an enormous victim services department. Last year alone, we serviced 300 families who were involved in alcohol-related crashes, either injured themselves or had family members that died. In the next 4 years, we could service another 1,200. I would assure you that any family member or any friend of someone that has been involved and injured in an alcohol-related crash or has died in an alcohol-related crash would not consider this to be a footnote in their lives. How many people do we want to set a goal for to kill on our highways in an alcohol-related crash? MAD's goal is zero. We'd like to go out of business. So I would urge you to pass this bill because we do know from many studies, such as the Center for Disease Control, the American Medical Association, and several health care providers, that 0.08 is a piece of a puzzle that we know will save lives. Thank you for your time. We do support this bill.
Thank you, ma'am. Before you leave the table, is there anyone on the committee who has a question of this witness? Raise. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ma'am, thank you. Thank you. We have, Representative Strong, we have at least three amendments that I'm aware of that I'd like to go to next. However, if there's questions on the bill of the author, let's go to those now. Did you have one? Representative Paymark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Strong, I just want to follow up on a comment that was made by the the testifiers about the fiscal impact and the direction that Representative Lippman was going. And I've reviewed the, since the meeting started, the fiscal notes, and I'm just wondering if you can clarify a couple of things for me. On the local impact note, it talks about the increased cost due to the lowering of the blood alcohol concentration to 0.08 and the costs of the functions of increased license, revocations, appeals, criminal charges, court costs, jail time, supervision, and fee revenues. And it says that these costs are not funded in this legislation. And if I'm reading correctly, this looks at if we do begin this in 2007, that there'll be a $1.6 million impact to counties and cities. So that's question number one: how we're addressing that what seems to be an unfunded mandate. And then the second question has to do with the federal money that we will get, and whether we can use any of that. It looks like $74 million when I look at the fiscal note, unless I'm wrong here, from the federal government, if any of that can be used to defray any of the state costs that we will incur by going 0.08.
Mr. Chair, Representative Paymar.
Representative Strachan.
If I can take the second question first, my understanding is, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Carter, but the federal funds are specifically assigned to highways, I believe. And in terms of the first, and I should also mention, I'm sure we've all heard this before, but even in 2007, there is an opportunity cost to the money that we would have had but didn't over that period of time. And if, Mr. Chair, if I may, could I have Mr. Carter answer the first question?
Yes, Mr. Carter.
Mr. Chair, Representative Paymar, currently there is no funding here for the locals. The local units of government, and I think you're right, the fiscal note came in at the first year about $1.1 million and the second year at $1.5 million. But I should also point out that that local impact statement does not include some of the other items that they're going to generate revenue on, such as booking fees. I think we heard about this the last couple of hearings, about a $10 booking fee. It doesn't also include probation fees that most counties are now charging. So just a little added comment to that.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Carter, Representative Strachan, I mean, so we are past, just want to be clear, I've supported 0.08, but I just want to make sure that we're clear that if we pass this, we're saying we're passing the bulk of this on to counties and cities, and we're not helping them defray any of their costs. And that's correct? There's no funding for the counties to pay for this.
Right. Mr. Chair, Representative Paymar, as the bill stands now, there is no funding for the local units of government.
And Mr. Chair, and then the state the federal money can't be used to defray any of the state costs for prisons, for the Attorney General, for public safety. That's correct, Representative Strachan.
Representative Strachan.
Mr. Chair, that is my understanding, Representative Paymar. And if I may follow up, in recognition of the issue you raise, And recognizing impacts on local governments. For that reason, we've discussed one of the amendments that's coming up for that very reason.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll wait until I hear the amendment then before I make some closing comments on the fiscal impact.
Representative Fuller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Paymar, your segue was wonderful into the A3 amendment. With your indulgence, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A3 amendment.
Representative Fuller moves S0058A3. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, it's I share Representative Paymar's concerns with this bill. I think actually I have several concerns with this bill, but if it is going to move forward, what the A3 amendment does is try to address the issue of local costs. And as drafted, the 0.08 and 0.09 offenders, this would give the surcharge monies for those 0.08s and 0.09s back to the local units of government to try and offset some of the increased costs they're going to face for jail time, officer time, court time, all of the like. So this is a way to start to address the issue of as the Fed's mandated to us to pass this legislation. Hopefully we can stop that ball from rolling further downhill and try and at least address the issue of local funds for some of our cities and counties and and I appreciate your support for the amendment.
Representative Paymar.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fuller, what's the surcharge on, and how much revenue is raised on an annual basis?
Representative Fuller.
Mr. Chair, Representative Paymar, for the .08 and .09 offenders, it would depend on how many of those individuals the prosecuting authority would arrest and charge. If they didn't arrest anybody at .08, they wouldn't get any of this revenue because that's where the revenue comes from. It's a $35 surcharge that they would be receiving. So if they didn't have anybody that was in that .08 or .09 level, they'd have no increase in cost, and they would also not receive a surcharge.
Representative Paymar.
Well, I'm still trying to figure out, Representative Fuller, how much money that this would raise. $35, I mean, trying to remember the number of offenders that we're anticipating in fiscal year 07. $35 is not going to make up the cost to the counties per individual offender.
Mr. Carter, do you have any input at this point?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we have some rough ideas. We will be requesting a new fiscal note on this because there is some drastic changes. But I think what Representative Fuller was saying is that the surcharge, we have been raising that lately. It now currently is $60 on every fine. And what this does is this takes $50 of that surcharge, and it gives it back to the local units of government. Rough calculations, we're calculating for a full year it's going to bring in about $44,000. You also have in this amendment, there's the 20% of the fines for the first-time offenders will be going to the local units of government. And the average fine, I think, is around, according to the courts, around $637. We're estimating that is probably going to be bringing in $112,000 to maybe $120,000 per year, once again, to the local units of government.
Before you go any further, Representative Lesh, did you have something on this?
Yes, I did. Mr. Chair and Representative Fuller, I guess as a prosecutor for a local unit of government and a person for whose position still has not been filled since I've left to come down to the legislature here this year, we're kind of short on staff, and a person who's interested in retaining more revenue for my local prosecuting jurisdiction, what would stop me as a prosecutor from getting a .11 individual in and letting them plead down to a .09 to get more revenue for the city?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Fuller.
Nothing would stop you from doing that, I don't believe.
Well, I didn't ask.
Any comments?
If I could query, Representative Fuller would yield for a question on the A3. When I talked with officials at Washington County, the compliance costs they estimated were between $75,000 and $100,000 for this one. I'm sympathetic to your amendment, but with a res of only $44,000 statewide, that wouldn't even cover my county, let alone yours and everyone else's. Is this nearly enough, or is this just a good start, or a symbolic measure only?
Representative Fuller.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Lippman, this, in my mind, is only a beginning for us to need to look at the cost that we're going to be passing on to our local units of government. I am very willing and open to looking further at some pots of money that we can look at to make sure that we're fully funding this mandate. But in the end, I would be voting no on this piece of legislation because of some of my concerns for the mandate going to local units of government and many other reasons. But as we move down this forward, as the governor's now on board and the Senate has passed this legislation, I think we need to start to address some of the issues of local costs going that we're going to be mandating onto our local units of government. And I'm looking at this as only a start, Representative Lippman.
Representative Paymar, left off with you, but let's go back to you and make sure we don't skip order here.
I guess I was just confused by what Mr. Carter was saying, because I don't see what he was saying in the amendment. I mean, I see on page 1, line 22, I see us changing the credit from $32 to $35. I don't know where this $50 came from that you were talking about, unless there's another amendment that I'm missing. So I don't understand what you were saying.
Well, Mr. Carker.
Mr. Chair, I can answer this, but I may also refer to Mr. Cox here. But what they're leaving in is they're leaving in the 39% that will be going to the post board of the 69 or the of the. This is a, it's a very confusing issue, the surcharge. It's the way it's way we have dealt with it over the years. But we're leaving that in, and we're also leaving, I believe, at the 1% that goes to the DNR. And I would refer to Mr. Cox if he has any other comments on that.
Mr. Cox.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Paymar, it is a confusing structure, and the way that this amendment is set up for .08 and .09 offenders, that class there between .08 and .10, the $35 that would otherwise have gone to the general fund under this statutory scheme would stay with the local prosecuting, the jurisdiction that has responsibility. It wouldn't necessarily go to the prosecutor's office. It just stays with the jurisdiction, the city or the county. And in addition, the 60% under paragraph A, clause 3, also would stay with that local unit of government. So as Mr. Carger stated, the 39% that goes to post board would still go there. The 1% that goes to the DNR still goes there. The money for these .08 and .09 offenders, the new offenders, will go to the local unit of government under this amendment. And that's about $50 per person.
Thank you. Representative Lippman.
Mr. Chairman, if I could ask Representative Strawn a question. We are on the
A3 amendment.
Can I ask my
yes,
related to
surely.
The A3? Mr. Chairman, Representative Strawn, for those of us on the committee who are concerned not only about local impact costs, but the fact that, perhaps uncharitably, some agencies could be considered winners and losers under this, which is the Transportation Department and managing the Trunk Highway Fund gets a big boost, but the compliance costs are visited upon the Attorney General, the Public Defense Board, and the court system in order to generate those federal revenues. And how, in your mind, do you reconcile that, and what should this Finance Committee, if we're trying to adjust the ledger across state government and not think of it only agency by agency, what is it that you would advise us to do?
Representative Strawn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lippman. Short answer is I share your concerns with local mandates. I share your concerns with what the effect's going to be. I don't think it will be as impactful as some would suggest it is. But whatever it is, there will be an impact. And the short answer to it is that between the surcharge change that Representative Fuller's amendments proposes, as well as the basically a blank appropriation coming out of this committee, going forward to transportation, finance, and ways and means, I think we do need to address that as we move forward, and we're making that statement that we are committed to doing that. What those numbers are going to be, I think we have yet to determine, and the fiscal note coming from Mr. Carter later, I think, has to address that.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Representative Lippman.
Just briefly, so if I understand your advice, Representative Stram, you would urge accepting of both the A3 and the A6, have I got it right?
I don't have the A6.
Let's deal with the A3 right now.
Okay.
Shall I answer that?
Representative Strawn.
Mr. Chair, I'm pleased the Representative Fuller offered this amendment, and I agree with it, and I'll take it as a friendly amendment.
Okay. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The issue of the unfunded mandate really hangs over this whole issue of .08. And I do want to point out, the $35 Representative Fuller really doesn't amount to hardly anything as it relates to my county, for example, Ramsey County. We're looking at costs in excess of $280,000 to implement .08, and this will bring in, $6,000-$7,000. So it's really an illusion to think that it's going to have any kind of meaningful impact.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Representative Fuller.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I'm under no illusion that this is some windfall for counties and cities. I'm under no illusion to that fact. But we need to start addressing, the problem. This goes down that direction only a little way, but it's a start. I'd be happy to work with you and any other members of the committee that want to help try and find bigger pots of money to make sure we're getting, to our local units of government.
To raise taxes.
Just to clarify the amount that this amended, this proposed amendment would raise. I've heard a lot of numbers being thrown around. So for the record, Mr. Carter, what amount of money are we talking about?
Mr. Chair, committee members, we are roughly, now we will be getting an official fiscal note, but I am estimating it at around $156,000 a year. Possible discount for the first year, but from there on, it's going to be about $156,000.
Representative Fuller, that's a good start. I like your amendment, and shortly we will be voting on it. Is there anything else, Representative Johnson? Anything else from anyone? Now's the time. I don't want to squelch debate or cut questions short. Is there anything else on this amendment, then?
I renew my motion.
Please do. Representative Fuller renews his amendment to be passed, and that is the A3 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. Motion prevails, and the amendment A3 is adopted. We then have amendment A2 in the packet. The chair will move the A2 amendment. And basically what this amendment does is currently the law requires that records be kept for at least 15 years. There is no date where the record must be expunged. This amendment, if passed, would allow for an expungement of a driver's offense on his record. To be purged after 10 years if certain things occur. First of all, that the offense is more than 08 but less than 0.10. Further, that the offense is the first incident. And third, that their record be clean for 10 years, after which an expungement could occur. Representative Strawn, your comments.
Mr. Chair, and yes. I think the purpose of this particular amendment is to provide some sort of an expungement mechanism for 10 years after for someone with a first offense at 0.08, 0.09, if there are no further alcohol offenses. The current clock, so to speak, on alcohol offenses in the state of Minnesota is 10 years, so I don't see that as negatively affecting prosecution over time. So I'm neutral on this particular amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay, discussion on the amendment. Any discussion? It is the A2-2 amendment. I'd like to amend my motion, and the motion is now before us. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. Motion prevails, and that amendment is adopted. I have one more amendment. It's the A6 amendment. The purpose of this amendment is to strike the funding language in the Senate file on page 15, which would be lines 6 through 27. I don't believe that the funding as listed by the Senate is appropriate, number one. Number two, along with Representative Fuller's previous amendment, I too would like to see more money go to the locals to pay for this mandate that we're looking at. And third, frankly, the amendments that we're attaching will require another fiscal note. I will ask this committee to act today and move this bill along. So the fiscal note will have to join the bill in transportation finance or ways and means. But as far as this amendment goes, A6, I'd ask the committee to delete the funding listed by the Senate and provide for blank appropriation. Discussion.
Chair.
Representative Paymar.
What are you on line four from the named fund? What is that?
Help me out.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Cox. I'm going to ask for
Mr. Chair and Representative Paymar, in each subsequent paragraph, the fund that the money comes from is named. And since there are several different funds that are used, it's listed in each paragraph instead of just general fund, because it does come from several. For instance, line 6 to 8 is from the general fund. And lines 14 to 16, that amount would come from the highway users tax distribution fund.
And Mr. Chair, your rationale for not accepting this Senate language again is what?
I'll restate. In my opinion, the amounts listed in the Senate file are not appropriate. Secondly, I'm concerned about finding additional funding before the bill leaves the House, before it leaves the committees, more funding for locals. And I think that answers, well, I hope that answers.
Representative Chair, wouldn't the Board of Public Defense and Department of Corrections and all the other entities here need the amount that is recommended to be appropriated out of the general fund? I mean, isn't this what they're going to require in order to implement .08?
I don't know that the answer is yes or no. Clearly, they need a sum of money. We're going to rework the fiscal note, and I'm going to ask Mr. Carter to explain how and when perhaps we've done that in the past. And Mr. Carter,
Mr. Chair, committee members, first should point out that this is a very complicated fiscal note. In fact, when we do training for new members, we say if you can understand the DWI fiscal note, you won't have any problems with any other fiscal notes. This also has to move through probably at least three other committees, state government because it has the attorney general in there, environment because it has some environmental funds, and also transportation because of the public safety costs and the federal funding. Also, it has been in the past, the history of this committee is that usually it has been passed out without appropriations, and they have been added in ways and means, and I think even under Representative Murphy, that issue that took place under when she was chair. Also, their targets have not been set yet. Currently, the way the bill sets, there sets a deficit in there for the general fund in the next biennium. And also with the new amendments, too, that have been added today will change the fiscal note.
Any further questions? Further discussion? On the A6 amendment, I'll renew my motion. On the A6 amendment, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
As opposed, say no.
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Are there any further amendments at this time? On the bill, as amended.
Did we vote on A5? Or is that not being offered?
Representative Paymer has not been offered.
So, Mr. Chair, that it's not being offered, then .08, if it was passed by the legislature, would begin when in 05 then. There was talk that it was going to be delayed until 07.
The amendment does. Representative Paymer, the amendment in the packet does delay it to 05. However, no one is offering that amendment that I can tell. Therefore, if this bill moves along as it's currently worded, has an enactment date of August of 04. Is that correct?
Okay. Thank you.
Right. Discussion. Sorry. Thank you. Representative Johnson, go ahead. To the bill.
Well, I just want to point out there really are two public safety issues here. One is the .08 itself, which I certainly support. But the other one is the funding of this .08, because if we don't provide the funding to our counties and to our probation services throughout the state, we are really jeopardizing public safety. We can't expect caseloads, which have already risen to as much as 300-400, to provide any kind of supervision of DWIs, not to mention the fact it will be taken away from some of the other expectations legislation will be passing, sex offender legislation will be passing. It's going to put more strain and stress on probationary services. The point is, if we do not fund this particular legislation, we are putting at risk public safety, and certainly that is one of our responsibilities as a government, is to make sure that we fund these public safety initiatives.
Thank you. Anything further on the bill? Representative Strawn, would you renew your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd renew my motion to recommend to pass Senate File 58 as amended to the Transportation Finance Committee.
That is the motion that is before us. You're seeing no further discussion. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
Motion prevails. The bill as amended is recommended, does pass, and is referred to the Committee on Transportation Finance.
Thank you,
no other business to come before us. Thank you. This meeting is adjourned.